Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us in studio for a bit here is Corey Strothman, who is a former principal in the Shawnee Mission School District. This is Mental Health Awareness Month, which I think is important on its own, but also to talk about when we talk about men with that issue. And his story has been very public. We'll let him tell it, but we're going to spend some time this hour talking about depression, about therapy. I did a poll on my Twitter account yesterday, and I'll give you the results of that, asking how many people have been to therapy and what your feelings are about it. It's something we have never talked about on this program that I think is worth some discussion. If you have questions for him, particularly when it comes to some of the advice stuff, not necessarily about what happened to him, but about finding a therapist and that kind of thing, feel free to text us at 22980. Corey Strothman is here. Thanks a lot for being here.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So for those that don't know, sort of how your story became public, you're a former principal in the Shawnee Mission School District, Rose Hill Elementary School. Take us back to January, kind of how some of this came to a head, and then we'll get into some of the backstory.
Yeah, so in January, I found myself in one of the worst places I've been in my life. A lot of pain inside, a lot of self-doubt. My self-esteem had plateaued at zero. And in later January, I received a DUI. And at that point in time, I thought that life was over. I thought that, there was no hope in the future for anything and everything. And I was just at a loss.
So you were a principal in the Shawnee Mission School District mm-hmm. at that time. And as I know from teaching, you can't get a DUI and still continue to keep the job. What happened on a particular evening?
So after I found myself in the Shawnee police station in handcuffs, mm-hmm. I really just started to think, what has my life become? I always had a very high sense of pride on my accomplishments and what I could do to help others. But for the longest time, I never helped myself. And you just can't live life that way. So through hard thought, I talked to my wife, my family, and I said, it's time. I surrender. That was the point in my life that in the moment, I was so upset. I was upset with everyone. But if you ask me today, it was what saved and changed my life.
I want to go back to, when did you start being cognizant of the fact that you were dealing with maybe some mental health issues, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think on some level, when you're a kid, you don't know, and you certainly aren't going to label that, oh, this is depression or this is whatever. Talk about your struggle even leading up to that point.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And really, I was in denial my whole life. I still didn't want to diagnose it. It was about 3 years ago, I got a phone call from my brother, and he told me he was in the hospital and he had cancer. Mm. And I just sunk in the couch. And I really struggled the next 2 days. And thankfully, my wife, being the person that she is, she called me out on it and said, you know what? I don't think it's just this. I think that you have some other issues that you've dealt with. I've seen signs. I really think you need to get to a doctor. And I value my wife's word, and I started to think about it, and that's what I did.
I want to be clear for people that don't necessarily know the story of the accident, because that was how a lot of this became public. So it's a Friday afternoon in January, mm-hmm. And you're arrested for driving under the influence, hitting a car, and leaving the scene. You resign quickly after that, which makes sense. You now realize you've got to take care of your health. Mm-hmm. And what had been going on that day? Can I ask just about that day?
Yeah, that's fine. So I was at work at a conference in Excelsior Springs, and that wrapped up around noon, and I actually had a therapy appointment that afternoon. So I was off from work, and I had a lot of issues going on just because I was so angry at people because people didn't understand the pain, and I had family coming into town, and that was on my mind, the whole therapy appointment. That's all I could think about is I'm so mad at these people. They don't understand. I don't want to be around them. One thing led to another, and the next thing you know, the end result was bad.
So a lot of people, it's my understanding, when they're dealing, they're self-medicating with booze, right? And whatever else it may be, whatever vice it may be. But you said you were already in therapy before the DUI. Talk about those first initial steps of entering therapy and how long you were in there that it still wasn't, you know, because I think it's not a one-time fix. Well, it's not going to the doctor.
Let me ask first, actually, how did you view therapy?
To start off, I did not want to be in therapy at all. That's where my downfall came is, yeah, I got a diagnosis of depressive disorder 3 years ago,
okay,
but I didn't live life like I had that diagnosis. I was refusing. I thought, you know, that's a sign of weakness. I don't need that. I started medication, but again, when I started to feel good, I wouldn't take it half the time. And I made so many mistakes. That's my story. That's what I want people to know is that's not the path you have to go through. These steps can work, but you have to work them the right way. And I made that mistake. So when you talk about self-medication, well, when you're not taking medication consistently, then when you're down in the dumps, the only way I knew how to escape was I'd have a few drinks at night after everyone went to bed. And that's how I cope because I wanted to feel normal. I felt like I wasn't normal. And that's the little part of time that I could feel normal.
Mm. And that's a really common story from, I have a lot of alcoholics in the family, and that's a common story, is that they're just looking for the break, or they're looking to feel better, but it is just something you're doing because you don't feel right like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So were you an alcoholic? Did you have a drinking problem? Do you see it that way?
So depression, I finally started to realize I had depression, right? And then as things got worse and worse, unfortunately, depression opened the door to alcohol abuse. I hadn't had symptoms of alcohol abuse, you know, throughout my life, but it got to the point where that's the only way I knew how to cope. I'd wake up in the morning and I was depressed because I had drank. And then I drank because I was depressed. And that's a cycle that it is tough to get out of, especially when you keep everything to yourself.
Mm.
No one knows.
Mm. Yeah, that shame. It's that you feel bad that you've done it, and then you feel bad anyway, and then you feel bad what you're doing to try to fix it, and there's no way out of that. How did it look on the outside? I mean, you're still working, you know, until the accident, you were working, mm-hmm. you know, I assume functional. Mm-hmm. How did it look to people?
Sure, I want to make sure everyone's clear that I didn't ever drink on the job or it didn't impact my daily duties. I still gave it all to my job. And that's, you know, that was me again thinking I owe it to all these people, but I don't owe it to myself. And I would do everything that I could to give everything I had at work. And then at night, I just fell apart. But when I went to work, for the most part, no one knew. I told my staff because they deserve to know, but I'd put on that false front, you know, I'd put on a fake smile every once in a while, do my normal actions because I wanted to hide it like anything, because I didn't want the social stigma of a depressed principal to be out in the public.
Mm. Especially, yeah, the leader of a school in which there are kids around, you know, and you're the leader. I'm actually surprised that you told your staff.
It was to the point where they deserved it. I trusted and loved my staff with everything. And I talk all the time about taking care of yourself. I say that a lot. Man, I can give advice. I had 550 kids in the building. I had a huge community. I helped every day. I couldn't give advice to myself, and that really bothered me. So I did fill them in on the situation.
Was it your brother's cancer diagnosis, and then you took that and really hard, and that's where you end up in therapy?
So it started medication first.
Okay.
And I didn't go to therapy right away because, again, I didn't want to go to a stranger and talk about my feelings.
Oh,
that's
weird.
Not manly, right?
It's
It's a sign of weakness. And so then my doctor suggested a therapist. I shoved it to the side. My wife's a therapist. I eventually said, okay. And I got online and I did an online therapist. So at least I'm not in person with him and I can just close the computer and get away from it, right?
I want to talk more about that, about the therapy experience. First of all, I think what you are saying is very common, particularly for a guy, you know, that it's, and especially if you didn't grow up, I don't know what your childhood was like, but for me, people didn't talk about things ever. And so to talk about, in fact, if you were to bring up the idea of therapy to my mom now, she would kind of blow that off. Like, no, 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 that's not, you know. So I think even it, maybe it's a generational thing, but I think there is still a stigma attached to going to therapy in the first place. How did it go at the beginning?
Again, it was me not giving full effort. And if you go to therapy just to sit through and put in the time, just like anything else, you're not going to get anything out of it. But it wasn't truly until after my incident that I took therapy to heart and I started consistently going and I started to put it out there and have those conversations. There were even times when I was depressed before, I would say I'd go to therapy and then I would skip it.
What were you afraid of?
I get it.
I was afraid to be vulnerable. I was afraid of judgment, even though I know it's 100% confidential. What if one person, I walk out of a building and one person sees me there? And then it runs from there. Oh, Mr. Strothman is depressed. Mr. Strothman can't handle his life. He can't handle his work. And that would have been far from the truth, but that was running through my head every minute.
All right, we'll take a break here. I want to come up. You get a lot of response from people. You have a website where you have been blogging and keeping people updated because you've been hearing from a lot of people. GraceInYourCorner.com. We'll talk more about that. And what has happened since then and kind of where you see this going. And for people that anytime we talk about things like this, there are a lot of people thinking to themselves, that sounds like me. And I want to also go positively with this so that people know kind of how to approach it if they want the same help. So we're continuing our conversation in studio with us is Corey Strothman, who is the former principal of Rose Hill Elementary School in the Shawnee Mission School District. He does a blog on a site, graceinyourcorner.com. And his story's been well publicized about, I think a lot of people didn't know the story. And then unfortunately, the DUI that happened in January, quit your job because at that point, it's pretty tough to have a job in education after that. And we're talking a lot about depression and about mental health and about the signs and therapy. And some of you are texting questions in. You can continue to keep those going at 22980. We have a lot still to get to, so you're going to stick around here for a bit. Can you tell us how you're doing now? And then we'll talk about the steps that it took to get there.
Yeah, it sounds funny. I'm 34 years old and I'm unemployed, but I can tell you that I'm in the best spot of my life that I've ever been in. I have focus of clarity. My faith is back on top, my family, and, it's good to see life in the way that I am right now.
All right, so we need to talk about how you got there, because we've kind of, we've mentioned several things. We've mentioned therapy, but you also did some serious rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, after the night of the 25th, I had spoken with my parents, and I just, I was sobbing and said that it was time to get help. So from there, we looked at some rehab places, and it's really hard in mental health to find rehab places that focus on both depression and substance abuse. So we went to Newton, Kansas for Prairie View, and I was there for 18 days. There's no communication there. I get three calls a week for 10 minutes, which was good. I was cut off from all the media. I didn't have to see all those reports run through. But I was there for 18 days. I came back to Kansas City, and then I started the rest of the work, the real work, and I went to a psychiatrist. I started going to a therapist consistently, and the biggest thing was the skeletons were out of the closet at this point. Everyone knew, so I could be very open and honest, and it was such a sigh of relief. Weight was off my shoulders that I could speak to people about that, and then I knew that I had an army of people in my corner. So it's really so many different aspects that it takes. You can't just take medication. You can't just go to a therapist, and you can't bottle it up. I mean, I've been very authentic with talking with people. I've consistently taken my medication, even if I'm feeling great. Psychiatrist, therapist, and to me, it's sharing because connecting with other people like I am right now, I'm trying to help others, but in reality, that helps me too.
We're getting questions about the family that you have and realizing that there are many other people that were affected by this besides you. And even before the accident, you've mentioned wife and family and kids. Can you talk about the rest of your family and how they have been affected by what has happened?
Yeah. First of all, I'll go back and I take away my DUI if I could go back in time. But the second thing is not the pain for me, but the pain that I've caused my family. I left Kansas City, but my wife and boys had to sit there and see all the news stations and all the publications come out and drag our name through the mud. And it's a lot of hurt. And this wasn't just the DUI. Throughout my depression, just not knowing how to handle it, often I was good at in public, but I took it out on home life and I'd isolate. Wasn't the father or husband or even son that I wanted to be. So there's a lot of built up hurt there. And trust me, when I got back to Kansas City, there was plenty of bridges to repair, and I'm still repairing those because they never deserved that. And it's very hard on the spouse and families. And I think that that's a huge issue to talk about.
Can you explain to people the difference between what happens in with a psychiatrist versus a therapist and why you saw both?
Yeah, so a psychiatrist is someone that's going to prescribe you medications. That's their specialty area. You can go to your physician, but these are people that go specifically for medication. So when I was in rehab, I was with a psychiatrist for 18 straight days to really balance out my medication and see if I can hit the reset on that. So I consistently go back and just check in and seeing how that medication's working. Whereas opposed to a therapist, you're more going in to talk about issues, to work through those issues, to gain coping skills of how you can handle them in the future.
Did you even know what you needed to work out? Did you go in with a goal even knowing what the end game was?
When I came back?
When you went into therapy, when you started that process, did you even know what the goal was in the end?
No, when I went into therapy, I really didn't know. I mean, I knew that it was something that I needed to do. But at this point, I surrendered and I was just going to trust the process. And that's what I did.
We had a good question from the text line. If you know somebody in your circle is dealing with depression, how best to support them in retrospect now, or if you would just see that, what should the family members do?
Yeah,
it gets that deep.
Yeah, that's a great question because it would have been very difficult. People were walking on eggshells around me. And I hope that the person that has mental illness is open and honest with them, because I think you have to have people that hold you accountable. Like my closest friends, my family, I told them, look for these symptoms. And if I'm doing it, call me out on it. But you can also push too far if it's not someone that you want to be doing it. So it depends on how close you are with that friend, what they're willing to share. And if you're not sure, shower them with love. Let them know that you support them and you love them.
Can you stick around a little bit?
Absolutely.
We're getting a ton of questions now for Corey Strathman. 22980. We can get into a lot of different things here. A lot of you are asking some of those similar questions about with your family. And a lot of people are texting in their questions. And this one is coming in a lot at 22980. And frankly, this is a question that we get a lot whenever we talk about this, is the cost of getting help. Because you sought help, therapy and rehab since then and for depression and alcohol issues, substance abuse issues. What do you do? Therapy is not cheap. Not all insurance covers it. Not everybody has insurance. What about, you can't find a therapist or it's too expensive. What help is out there?
That's one of the hardest things to navigate in the field. And I think that's an area of concern for our country as a whole, is how do we get people to the support they need? I was lucky enough that my wife spent time in the medical field and she could direct around that and get that. I don't have all the answers, but I know it has a lot to do with insurance. With insurance nowadays in rehab, really they try to keep you to 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. It used to be back in the past, it used to be a month or so, but I would do a review every 3 days to see if the need was still there, because they want to get you in and out, which I think is a shame. But then, therapists, I rely on people that I know that go to therapy. I rely on my physician that has suggestions, but you have to find the right therapist for you. So you might have to try a couple out first. And if you don't click with that person, then you're wasting your time and your money.
Can you talk more about that? Again, for people that maybe have thought, yeah, maybe therapy would be good for me. I don't know. And I think for men, it's even harder. But it can be frustrating for people if they don't get it right the first time and they don't click with that person the first time. What are you looking for when you're choosing a person?
You're looking for someone that you can have comfort and trust in. You're looking for someone that seems that they actively care about what you are trying to accomplish. And I'm looking for someone that can help me build skills, because I'm not going to spend my life in a therapy office. I'm going to go back out to the real world and those triggers will be there. what have I gained from that experience to successfully handle it myself?
Here's a question we got. You've mentioned being on medication. Texter asked, how does the medication affect personal time with your wife? When I was on SSRIs.
What?
SSRIs, right? That's what it is. I'm going to ask just your relationships in general and okay, how it affects your mood. But it had a huge impact negatively on my relationship. Can you just talk about, we're not going to go personal with it. I know what you're asking, but I think it's, to me, it's, it really does affect your mood. You know, it can affect your mood in multiple directions. And also, sometimes it takes you a while to get to the right antidepressant and to get to the right drug that works for you.
Yeah, but I got to think, let me jump in here, that
yes,
anybody
Brady.
Working towards better mental health is going to end up with improved relationships, right? So there are even people that I know, and not even on that level, but you, I feel like interpersonal relationships are improved and easier with somebody that has a certain amount of mental health awareness.
I'll let you talk about that. Yeah. I'm making no assumptions.
No, I do agree with that. I mean, if you are struggling with mental health or addiction, any of that, you can talk until you're blue in the face, but you've probably said it before. You have to prove it through actions. And if your loved one sees you working hard and doing everything that you detailed out in the plan, then yeah, you're going to grow closer together. If my wife were sitting right next to me now, she would just say how proud she is of me because I came back and I kept her involved in everything and I continue to do that. And I do what I say I'm going to do. You have to stick to it.
Did you have a pretty good, was your marriage pretty good before all of this happened? I mean,
yeah,
things were in a pretty good place.
It was in a great place.
I think that's surprising to people. And that's, I'm sure, a question that you've gotten is, you know, would you tell me you became a principal at 28?
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredibly high achieving to hit that point. You know, I'm sure people wonder, well, did you not have a good family? Like, was your marriage with your wife not like what, you know, what was it then that got you here?
Yeah. And that, you know, that story is something that I was almost embarrassed to tell because I have an amazing family at home. I was raised with two parents that were the perfect model of what a loving relationship should be. They got me to church. They did everything for me. My in-laws are the same. My wife, you know, is fully supportive. We've had a great 10 years coming up this year.
Oh, congrats.
So most people I'm around that were dealing with these issues, they have some sort of trauma, but my story wasn't that. So it was really abnormal in that environment to see it. But, it, you know, depression or mental illness doesn't care who it chooses.
There are a lot of jobs in which getting a DUI or getting a felony, quite frankly, would make it difficult for you to stay in that job. And education is certainly one of those. In fact, when I was in school to become a teacher, it's one of the first things I tell you, get a felony on your record. And it's they don't even let you teach just because of that. Can you talk about what has happened professionally and where, you know, what the difficulty has been in terms of just a job hunt? There's a box that you have to check. You know, do you have a felony on your record? Just that.
Right. So the only mental health issues that I currently deal with is anxiety. And it's anxiety because I've been unemployed for over 100 days. I know how capable I am. I have a skill set that I believe, you know, has leadership. And I ran a building for 6 years. I was telling you guys earlier, I compare that to being a CEO of a small business. But I've applied and I've applied and I've applied and it just hasn't come through. I've only had two interviews in 3 months. And, you know, I don't know if it's because people have seen my story and the DUI or if I'm applying to a business and they see, well, this person's only been in education. There's no good there. But I'm just asking for someone to get to know me because I know I'm going to make a company lucky. It's just it takes a lot of time and it's painful.
Is that a common problem for people that might, you know, mental illness doesn't show up on a job application, but a felony might, you know, or a DUI might. And that's not always fair. You know, that doesn't tell your whole story.
And a Google search.
And a Google search would do it. Yeah. Is that a pretty common challenge, let's say, for people with mental illness, is having to explain that to employers?
I don't think they necessarily have to explain it. There is, I noticed on a lot of applications, it's, do you have a disability? And depression is listed under there.
Okay.
But there's also a box that says, I do not wish to disclose. I would advise not taking that route. I would say be authentic and, you know, just live with the results because then you start going down the path I did of hiding it and not wanting them to know. There's no way you can take care of yourself that way.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk because I have two men in the studio here. the perspective from being a guy when it comes to dealing with mental health and talking about your feelings and going to therapy. And I say it that way because I think it's something that we still have kind of a negative perception of unfairly. What are you men dealing with? What are you told that makes it difficult to, that one more barrier for you to get the help that you need? What's the mindset?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it stems from, and again, maybe this is something we're getting away from when we raise boys, but don't cry. Don't cry. That. Quit being a baby. I'll give you something to cry about. That sort of thing. I think also part of the interesting story here and part of the, to me, extra angle on awareness is this dude was running a school. This dude, you were a high achiever. You look at somebody, look, Howard Stern's been all over the news recently too. He's a big fan of therapy and is open about it. I think there's something to be said of, look, he was in a weird spot. To, you know, when you're running a school, you know, you don't want to show, you can't show weakness as a leader. And if people perceive it that way, correctly or not, you're in a weird spot. So I also think that compounds it. And you mentioned it earlier, that concern about judgment. If everybody's trusting you with their jobs and their kids and all this, for you to go, hey, I'm dealing with some of these issues, you don't know, yeah. You know? And obviously, to be a high achiever like that, you had loftier goals that he was still trying to achieve. And I don't even know what that would look like. But I think a lot of it stems from the, I'll give you something to cry about attitude that we raise boys with.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. It's the old traditional viewpoint of, I'm the man of the household. I am going to provide. I'm going to be the protector of the family. And there's no way that anyone wants to be vulnerable. And we see it, I said it several times, as a sign of weakness. And you don't want to be judged, but that is so far from the case. I mean, you actually, to me, and I've heard this from several other people, showing that and having the courage to come out and say that shows more of a man that you are than hiding it in.
Yeah. And I think the way we as a society has evolved towards mental illness, I would imagine 30 years ago, when people are talking about mental illness, they're talking about severe bipolar, that sort of stuff. You know, not as much as now. I think it's good that we're opening up and talking about day-to-day depression. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think scientifically, Jamie, we know more about, you know, the fact that there's a combination of chemical imbalance, you know, past trauma, yeah. You know. What
yeah,
I mean?
I agree. And you were the principal of an elementary school where you had young boys in an elementary school. Mm-hmm. How do we, and I'm thinking about the parents that are listening right now, to Brady's point, how do we talk to our kids differently, you know, so that we raise them so that as men, this isn't as difficult of a thing to approach.
I think you have to model it at home. I think that you have to show your child that it's okay to need support no matter what it is. It could be mental illness. It could be homework. It could be tying your shoe. But it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay not to have all the answers, because through life we get through it together, stronger as a group than we are as one.
The website is graceinyourcorner.com. A couple people would like to contact you. Can they do that through,
absolutely,
through the website, graceinyourcorner.com? You said you've been hearing from a lot of people and hearing a lot of people's stories, which is great. We'll do the same. A couple of you were calling to get in, 576-7798. We can have the therapy discussion. We can have the discussion about, this always happens whenever we talk about this. If you want to share your story of how you were on the dark side and made it out, if you want to inspire other people, if there are men listening that want to tell a similar story of how therapy helped them, if we can do any work here to kind of end some of the stigma, we can do that coming up next. Corey Strathman, thanks so much for being in studio. It was great to have you here.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.